Now turn to part three. You'll hear part of an interview with two sports psychologists called Sheila Forbes and Peter Maxton. For questions 15 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C, or D, which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 70 seconds to look at part three.
Today I'm with Peter Maxton and Sheila Forbes, both sports psychologists, helping professional footballers prepare mentally for their performances. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Sheila, how would you define your role?
It can vary depending on the individual I'm working with, but basically, I equip players with techniques to improve their performance. Initially, though, I have to make sure they understand what I do and show them what they'll get out of it so that they're properly on board from the outset. In my experience, players generally don't have tangible strategies to deal with the ups and downs that the game bombards them with. So I train them how to think on the pitch, how to structure their thinking, be more confident themselves, and not be intimidated by the apparent confidence of others.
So how do you set about achieving your goals?
Well, through a range of different approaches. I might set up a simulation of a performance, say, during which I'll be observing players for signs of repetitive patterns in behavior and thought processes that can have a damaging effect on what happens on the pitch. Then I'll set about seeing where they're coming from and begin the process of slowly breaking these patterns using imagery or anxiety control. But players have to feel I'll respect confidentiality. After all, they're almost admitting to what might be interpreted by others as weaknesses in their mental approach, which in turn might raise questions about their suitability as a team member.
So what does a sports psychologist need to bring to the job?
Well, during my career, I've worked in a number of sports, such as boxing and horse riding. None of them are sports I've ever performed in, and in any case, that's not demanded. What is needed, though, is that you understand the mental demands of those sports and are able to adapt your work so that it can be integrated into the performance environment. But if you're not honest to your clients about what you realistically can and can't do, you won't progress very far.
Peter, would you agree with Sheila?
Well, my experience as a psychologist has been limited to football, but I'd add that you also have to be independent, as you often have to make key decisions about an athlete on your own. But I'd certainly go along with Sheila's point about frankness. That's paramount, I'd say.
But you played sport as a student, didn't you, Peter?
Well, I've never been a professional sports person, but I did play a lot of golf and tennis as a student and was quite promising, although I don't think I took either of them terribly seriously. Then I hit what I can only describe as a stale patch and couldn't figure out why I was no longer up to standard. It eventually turned out that I'd been playing while suffering from an illness, a kind of fatigue syndrome. There wasn't the kind of monitoring you'd get nowadays that could have detected this earlier, and I was rather taken aback to discover there was no support when I switched back into playing again. That sparked my interest in the link between psychology and performance.
So, Peter, is there anything you dislike about the job?
Well, it does get a bad press in some quarters, with people suggesting we're simply doing this for financial gain, and realistically, can't help top sports people up their game. But all we're doing is ensuring optimal conditions for athletes to achieve a consistently high level of performance. There's a constant shift in environments, of course, but personally, I find that stimulating. And even within one club, you have a range of players and situations, and the techniques you learn are extremely transferable, as long as you're creative enough to do that.
So what do you both see as the future for sports psychology?
Well, as an industry, it does have a developmental path for professionals coming into it, with young people with specialist skills coming through now. But there's still some PR work for us to do. We're still treated with a certain amount of suspicion by fans, simply because they don't understand what we do.
Peter?
I hope the use of psychology becomes more mainstream in both player development and coaching education. But, as Sheila said, there are still barriers to be broken down, and psychology in sport should be put in perspective. It's part of the process of creating champions, which should be more widely publicised as a force for good.
Now you'll hear part three again.
Today I'm with Peter Maxton and Sheila Forbes, both sports psychologists, helping professional footballers prepare mentally for their performances. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Sheila, how would you define your role?
It can vary depending on the individual I'm working with, but basically, I equip players with techniques to improve their performance. Initially, though, I have to make sure they understand what I do and show them what they'll get out of it so that they're properly on board from the outset. In my experience, players generally don't have tangible strategies to deal with the ups and downs that the game bombards them with. So I train them how to think on the pitch, how to structure their thinking, be more confident themselves, and not be intimidated by the apparent confidence of others.
So how do you set about achieving your goals?
Well, through a range of different approaches. I might set up a simulation of a performance, say, during which I'll be observing players for signs of repetitive patterns in behavior and thought processes that can have a damaging effect on what happens on the pitch. Then I'll set about seeing where they're coming from and begin the process of slowly breaking these patterns using imagery or anxiety control. But players have to feel I'll respect confidentiality. After all, they're almost admitting to what might be interpreted by others as weaknesses in their mental approach, which in turn might raise questions about their suitability as a team member.
So what does a sports psychologist need to bring to the job?
Well, during my career, I've worked in a number of sports, such as boxing and horse riding. None of them are sports I've ever performed in, and in any case, that's not demanded. What is needed, though, is that you understand the mental demands of those sports and are able to adapt your work so that it can be integrated into the performance environment. But if you're not honest to your clients about what you realistically can and can't do, you won't progress very far.
Peter, would you agree with Sheila?
Well, my experience as a psychologist has been limited to football, but I'd add that you also have to be independent, as you often have to make key decisions about an athlete on your own. But I'd certainly go along with Sheila's point about frankness. That's paramount, I'd say.
But you played sport as a student, didn't you, Peter?
Well, I've never been a professional sports person, but I did play a lot of golf and tennis as a student and was quite promising, although I don't think I took either of them terribly seriously. Then I hit what I can only describe as a stale patch and couldn't figure out why I was no longer up to standard. It eventually turned out that I'd been playing while suffering from an illness, a kind of fatigue syndrome. There wasn't the kind of monitoring you'd get nowadays that could have detected this earlier, and I was rather taken aback to discover there was no support when I switched back into playing again. That sparked my interest in the link between psychology and performance.
So, Peter, is there anything you dislike about the job?
Well, it does get a bad press in some quarters, with people suggesting we're simply doing this for financial gain, and realistically can't help top sports people up their game. But all we're doing is ensuring optimal conditions for athletes to achieve a consistently high level of performance. There's a constant shift in environments, of course. But personally, I find that stimulating. And even within one club, you have a range of players and situations, and the techniques you learn are extremely transferable, as long as you're creative enough to do that.
So what do you both see as the future for sports psychology?
Well, as an industry, it does have a developmental path for professionals coming into it, with young people with specialist skills coming through now. But there's still some PR work for us to do. We're still treated with a certain amount of suspicion by fans, simply because they don't understand what we do.
Peter?
I hope the use of psychology becomes more mainstream in both player development and coaching education. But, as Sheila said, there are still barriers to be broken down, and psychology in sport should be put in perspective. It's part of the process of creating champions, which should be more widely publicised as a force for good.
That's the end of part 3.